Maybe I've eaten enough great food. Cray-Ray said to me, maybe you've had enough great food. I had no idea what he was talking about when he said it, but now I get it. Everything in this book should be taken with a grain of nutritional yeast because we don't know how I'll end up. By 2017, I may weigh 400 pounds and claim I'm working on another movie. I might slip back badly. I might fall off the unsalted hay wagon. But for right now, it feels great. And it's really easy. That seems to be a reoccurring pattern with me. The stuff that's supposed to be hard is easy. I get fucked up by the easy stuff. There's a great British TV show called Cracker that starred Robbie Coltrane, who is an amazing actor and with Cracker had the perfect show for his talents. Someone had the stupid idea of bringing it to the U.S. in the 90s, an even stupider idea of considering me to play his role. I guess they thought that the fact that Robbie was a big guy was more important than his stunning talent, so they had me audition. I don't mind auditioning. I go in with the attitude that I'm going to fail, so I might as well have fun. I often tell the person running the audition that if they want the character to be exactly like me, then I'm their man. Sometimes they want that and get me, but sometimes I do performance art in my auditions. Performance art really means I act like an asshole. I went up for the part in Wall Street and read for Oliver Stone the day after he won the Academy Award for Platoon. In the waiting room was every great actor in New York City, and they were all dressed wicked Wall Street-y. I was wearing a leather motorcycle jacket and some sort of hat advertising a tractor company. I was unshaven and wearing dirty sneakers. I probably looked like a 21st century billionaire, but I was auditioning in the 20th century. They're running behind, and I was waiting in the appropriately named waiting room. I had a show that night on Broadway, so I was going to have to split without auditioning if they made me wait much longer. They got to me right at the 11th hour, and I went in. I guess Oliver Stone is a genius. People love his movies. He's very intense. Probably a genius. But we kind of didn't hit it off. The moment we saw each other, well, the moment I saw him, I was uncomfortable. He commented on me looking like shit at an audition for Wall Street, and I said I thought he was a genius and could use his imagination to shave me and put me in a suit. I think the record shows that I'm already the asshole in this story. Can we call it performance art? I knew I wasn't getting the part, so there was nothing riding on the audition. If I succeed in the audition and get the part, that's the story. If I'm not going to get the part, then I need to manufacture an interesting loser story. It was clear I wasn't getting the part, so it became time to make a story out of it. There was a poster up behind Mr. Stone for Platoon. Don't forget, it had won the Oscar the night before. I said, you know what you should have done with Platoon? What? I have an idea for your movie. What are you talking about? You should do Platoon just the way you did it, but then when it goes to credits, you should have outtakes, like in Cannonball Run or Jackie Chan movies. Have, like, a take of Charlie Sheen with a leech on his face saying, does this look like a fucking anchovy or something? Or isn't that gook supposed to fall down when I shoot him? You know, stuff like that. I was getting my story. Oliver Stone said that would have ruined the picture. He wasn't clueless. He was fucking with me back. But all I wanted was a story, so I'm fine with part of the story being me getting fucked with. Well, maybe for your friends it would ruin it, but for my friends it would show that you know you're making a fucking Hollywood movie, and even though the subject matter is serious, it's still just a jive-ass way to sell popcorn. He wasn't buying it and was growing bored with fucking with me. I said one more hardcore asshole thing like, well, let's not argue about it. Just pull back half the copies and put my ending on, put them back out and see what the people think. You're a man of the people. I had my story. Now the temptation in telling this story is to make it look like I was brave and Oliver was an asshole. Nope. The truth is Oliver does everything right in the story, and I'm the asshole. I'm an asshole, especially when going for a story. It's performance art. He turned to the casting director and said something like, can you imagine putting this asshole in a movie? The casting people tried to explain that other people had done that, maybe because I had a show. He let me audition for the part. See, I told you he was the hero in this story. I was awful, and he told me so. I agreed. I had my story, and it was time to leave. But he had another idea. He said, let's have him read for a different part. He gave me the part of an asshole to read. He asked me to take it out in the other room and work on it. I said that I had a show and didn't have time, but I'd read it cold for him if he wanted. I read it cold for him, and that was that. I wasn't good at that role either. As I left the room, I said to all the other actors waiting to audition, be careful! Oliver's just going to talk to you about his personal relationship with Jesus. There was no reason to say that. I already had my story, but I thought it was funny. I think it was Mariel Hemingway who leaned in the door and said, "I've met him before, Mr. Stone. He's crazy." She had, and I am. But there are two more punchlines coming. I got the part. When my agent called and told me, I told her they'd made a mistake and they wanted Teller. He had auditioned straight and not gone for the story. I told her to call them back and tell them they just had the name wrong. My agent did that, but damn, Oliver did want the big asshole. So I shot Wall Street and worked with Oliver Stone and Charlie Sheen, and it was a one-day shoot for me and a nutty set. Charlie liked me, and we got along great. What more do you need to know? And then a couple months later, I was in a trendy NYC restaurant hobnobbing with my fellow wizards. There were show folk all around. Oliver Stone came over to my table, hardly leaned in at all, and said loudly enough for everyone around to hear, "Hey, Penn, we just couldn't find a way to make your scene work in the new picture, so you're cut out." And there we go. Oliver Stone wins every showbiz round. But I got a good story. When I went to audition for Cracker, I went in knowing I wasn't a good actor. That gives the fellow a lot of power. As Neil Young sang, "It's hard enough losing without the confusion of knowing I tried." I don't have that confusion. I never worked on acting. I'm a performer, not an actor. And that allows me to suck and not feel bad about it. I had the balls to audition with Robert De Niro, and I acted with Michael Keaton. And because I never set out to be an actor, I'm okay sucking, even in company that underlines that sucking. If you know you can't play basketball, playing with Michael Jordan would be just fun, right? I mean, takes all the ego out. Somehow I got through the first audition and got a callback. And all of a sudden, it seemed like I might have a chance of starring in the American version of a brilliant British TV show. And I started caring. I went to see my friend, the brilliant actor Dean Cameron. I call him Dino. And he worked with me. He also worked with me when I acted the part of a death row inmate in the off-Broadway play The Exonerated with Mia Farrow. I didn't enter the crazy competition there. Talk about playing basketball with Michael Jordan. Dino helped me to get better. I was becoming invested in getting the part. I didn't understand how I could star in a TV show while doing a Vegas show every night, but I wanted to win this time. I started to believe I could act. I didn't care about a story. I was trying to play a brilliant, fat, divorced alcoholic, and all I had for experience was being fat. Finally, after several callback auditions, the producer took me aside and said something like, "You're really good at all the hard stuff. The stuff none of the other people can do, you're great at. But you really aren't good at the easy stuff. The stuff we need done all the time, every show. You're just not good. We sure wish you could do the easy stuff." The hard stuff on a diet is supposed to be dealing with the cravings and mustering the willpower to pass up all the food you love. I had pizza in Brooklyn with Lou Reed, and I remember the night and that pizza. And now the same pizza is available in Vegas. But I don't need the pizza for the memory. The fabulous chef, Jet Tila, taught me to cook the best steak I've ever eaten. And I cooked a version on TV, and the judges agreed it was the best steak ever. And now I know how to do it and how good it is. And I live in Vegas, the land of good steaks. But it's still not hard to resist. I went to Krispy Kreme Donuts the day they opened in Las Vegas, and I got the first Vegas glazed raspberry-filled Krispy Kreme Donuts and some cold milk, and they were so good! I've had dozens and dozens, probably grosses, of Krispy Kremes. I had my mom's pork roast and homemade blueberry pie baked with shortening and blueberries she picked herself. Oh, she didn't pick the shortening herself. I had a Jet Tila steak. I had Indian food with the Prince of Sri Lanka. I had Chinese food at the best restaurant in Beijing, not as good as the pizza in New York with Lou Reed. I've had scallops on a dive boat, brought up from the bottom of the sea and served disgustingly fresh, almost live, with some wasabi right there on the boat. I've had my mom's macaroni and cheese with real Vermont cheddar. I've had one of Mrs. Teller's glorious meals with three different kinds of succulent meats and fresh bread and butter. I had the first Egg McMuffin served in Greenfield, Massachusetts, when I was in high school, because I thought it was funny to stay up all night and be there when they opened. No one is ever going to make a blueberry pie like my mom. I'm not ever going to have her gravy on Thanksgiving again. She and Lou Reed are dead and gone, and gravy without mom is just salty liquid fat. Sounds good. And pizza without the rock and roll animal is just pizza. I can't live those memories again, so why not make new good memories. I've had the lobster at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, and wow, it's good. I've had several different cuts of their steaks served rare, bloody, and perfect. I've had their fully loaded baked potato and loved all of it. I had a salad that was dripping with blue cheese and bacon. I had their chocolate mousse that I always seemed to have room for, another couple thousand fat calories. What I'd never had was their plain steamed asparagus with a little fresh lemon squeezed on it, and a plain earthy baked potato without even oil to make it shiny. That was a different thing. For almost 60 years, I ate like a fucking hell-bent pig. My mom fed me pretty well. I've eaten sea urchin and fried chicken and waffles. I've had real maple sugar on snow in a sugar house in New England with my mom, my dad, and my sister. I've had some great eats. So for the next 45 years, I'll make new memories. I'll have memories of eating things with my wife and children that'll be new and tasty and allow me to maybe spend more healthy years with said wife and children. I won't eat pizza with Lou Reed, but I have that memory. Maybe I'll get to eat a vegan meal with Paul McCartney. Who knows? As I write this, it seems like pure bullshit, the worst kind of resolution of cognitive dissonance. It's worse than sour grapes. It's boring steak. Some grapes are really sour, but I never had a steak that I didn't enjoy. So I guess it is bullshit, but it's bullshit that feels right for me now. I've had truffled macaroni and cheese with bacon at fancy-ass restaurants, and it didn't bring me the comfort of my mom's macaroni and cheese. Why keep trying to chase that first high? That's heroin thinking. Nothing is going to be like the first Krispy Kreme I had with Teller in South Carolina. Just two Yankee boys running away to be carny trash and getting our first taste of the sweet, fat South on our way to making magic. So fuck it. Let's have a potato.